everyone. Welcome to this evening's teleseminar, Beyond iMessages, Safe and Sane Couples Communication, led by Dr. Ellen Bader and Dr. Peter Pearson. I'm Zoe Laidlaw, and I work with Pete and Ellen, and I know many of you are familiar with their work, but I do want to take a minute to introduce them for the new people who are with us tonight. For more than 20 years, Dr. Ellen Bader and Dr. Peter Pearson have been helping couples resolve issues and create strong, loving relationships. They are the founders and directors of the Couples Institute, which offers workshops, therapy, and teleseminars like this one tonight to support the growth of relationships. Pete and Ellen have been featured on over 50 radio and television programs, including the Today Show and CBS Early Morning News. One of the hallmarks of their work is the practical nature of their exercises, and they provide immediate relief and long-term growth at the same time. Tonight's material is no exception. So let's get started. I'm going to push a button so that everybody is muted, and Pete and Ellen will speak until it's time for them to call from participants, and at that point I will unmute everybody.
So do you want to say something about the transcript, too?
I was going to mention at the end, but I can now. You may remember that that when you signed up for this workshop, this teleseminar, we offered a free transcript, and it will be available about 2 to 3 weeks after this evening. It takes a while for us to get the recording and get it transcribed and put together. And when it becomes available in 2 to 3 weeks, we will email all of you and let you know the link where you can go online and download it. Okay.
Yeah, this will really help so you don't have to take notes, because we're going to cover a lot of material too fast for you to take really good notes. And you will want to go back and especially get the structure of how to have this kind of dialogue and the instructions to make it easier.
And the format that we're going to use tonight is that Pete and I will be doing some teaching about the principles involved in Beyond iMessages, and then Pete will do a demonstration, an interview with Rachel and Michael, demonstrating the principles, and after they're finished, I will talk about some of the highlights of that, and then at the end, we will open it up for questions from those of you who are listening. So there are three primary points that we hope to communicate tonight. The first is how to effectively initiate emotionally charged discussions. Every couple is going to have, at times, emotionally charged discussions. It's inevitable. You can't avoid it when you're in a close, loving relationship with somebody and you have so many interdependencies. So we want you to come away with some ideas about how to get those conversations started in a productive way that goes beyond what is the traditional I method. We're also going to be talking about the importance of changing patterns and why it's so important to change the typical pattern that couples use. And last, we'll be looking at how you take your whole brain into account in managing your emotional reactivity with each other.
Okay, so the primary goal for tonight is to teach and to demonstrate a different kind of dialogue, and that is how to break those patterns of ineffective communication. And that's breaking the patterns is important tonight instead of looking at how to solve the problem. So what we're going to do is set the foundation for better solutions. What I notice so often in my office is that couples want to get a pretty rapid relief from a problem. And so they want to go from immediately to describing the problem, describing the stress, and then trying to set up a solution. Well, too often it doesn't work if the problem is very complex, but the problem is there's kind of an instinct for humans to take the same problem-solving pattern about where we're going to eat tonight, what movie to see, or where we go on vacation, and apply that to much more complex and more emotionally embedded problems. And it really doesn't work. So when couples come in, The number one presenting problem is we need to improve our communication. And generally, there's some kind of abstraction when I ask couples what that means, and there's something about, well, we need to focus on being more understanding or be understood, and if we understand what's going on, then that will be better communication. So the focus is on content. Often when couples come in, it's more traditional to say, okay, here's what you say, and then listen to your partner, and then trade sides. That's the easiest to teach, but that approach leaves out one whole region of the brain. It leaves out the brain that's emotional, or the technically inclined. It's called the limbic system. When we leave out the emotional brain and just focus on content and structure for how to talk about problems, you all, including Ellen and me, we hit the wall. There is something about getting into an argument that one part of us says, boy, is it stupid, it's going nowhere, she's getting defensive, I'm getting defensive, and yet it's like you're falling out of a tree. You can't seem to stop yourself. You just keep going, even though you know it's just getting worse, and the longer you talk, the worse it gets. So you have to include the emotional brain, because that's what's running the show when you start talking about problems. If you don't include the emotional brain as part of the solution, you might as well be trying to make rapid progress like being in a rowboat, only using one oar. Because the emotional brain actually evolved sooner, it's been around a lot more, longer evolutionary-wise than our prefrontal cortex, the thinking brain. And the emotional brain really is designed to be in attuned with danger. It seeks safety, either emotional or physical safety. It seeks security. It wants to be safe. That is the primary function of the emotional brain. So here's how it applies to communication. When people have had intensely bad experiences in their life, which seems to be more than we can manage or bear, what happens is that's a kind of trauma, and that trauma gets stored in the emotional brain. It gets recorded, stored, and then as we go through life, anything that looks similar to what is stored in that emotional brain as we go through life will activate the emotional brain. It puts us on alert, and at that point, if the emotional brain is highly activated, all we want to do is subdue the threat or get away from the threat. That primary instinct is so powerful that words and logic just can't override it very, very often. So what happens is sometimes that emotional brain, that system gets stuck in an on position, and it's always scanning for threats that remind them of bad experiences. And what we know is that now, through brain scans, etc., that the logical brain cannot override the emotional brain. It cannot re-regulate the emotional brain just using logic and reason, which is why often we try to apply logic to a highly volatile emotional topic and it doesn't work. Because under stress, the emotional brain takes priority. Here's a quick parallel. When you drink too much alcohol, what happens is the booze will temporarily disable one part of your brain called the cerebellum, and the cerebellum is responsible for keeping your balance. So too much booze will temporarily disable your cerebellum, and that's why cops will use the field sobriety test. They ask people when they think they've been drinking too much simply to walk heel to toe. And if you've had too much to drink, you can't do it. And it's because that part of your brain's just been disabled. Well, under high threat, your emotional brain disables your thinking brain, the part of your brain that says, oh, socially appropriate responses, this is what I should do. You can't remember all the structure you've had about how to communicate effectively because that part of your brain has just been disabled by the emotional brain. And that's why it's so hard if you just teach people the structure for how to talk to each other. It's often not sufficient. So, when we are under threat, we do three major things when we feel threatened from our partner, emotionally or physically. We want to fight back, and generally fight back means we criticize, we yell, we get sarcastic. What that emotional brain is trying to do from an instinctive position is trying to subdue the threat so that you can feel relief. So that's why we yell. It's an attempt to feel relief, to get recentered, to get regrounded. But it looks horrible to the person on the receiving end of it. So trying to dominate the threat is one major way. The second major way is to escape from it. And we simply call that withdrawing, shut down, get away from the person who it feels like it's too big of a threat. We can't dominate it, so now we just withdraw, shut down, and close out that person. It's an attempt to protect ourselves and get a semblance of safety. And the third major way that we try to get safe under threat is by going into some kind of resentful compliance or some kind of surrender. And that is designed to then placate the threat, and it's a self-protection to get relief. Now, when you think about it, all three mechanisms, attacking, criticizing, blaming, sarcasm, or withdrawing, cold shoulder, shut down, or resentful compliance, and the partner has kind of a suspicion that that's what's going on, all three of these will activate in our partner their protective mechanism. So now you have two people who are limbically functioning. Their emotional brains have just taken over, and there is no communication that's productive except reduce the threat. And so you got two people now under threat trying to reduce it. Whoa, let the games begin. So to have a much more effective communication about topics that are sensitive, which means each person probably has some kind of history around that topic that makes it sensitive, to have that kind of effective communication means we have to use the thinking brain and integrate it with the emotional brain so that the emotional brain doesn't take over. So what we're going to do now is give a demonstration for how we integrate the two brains when we start talking about a difficult topic. And that's why we have, to my gratitude and appreciation, a volunteer couple, because I thought it would be easier to do a demonstration so you could actually see it take place and how it unfolds rather than just give you the steps and then you think, wow, what does that really look like under pressure? What does that really look like when people apply these steps, and what kind of outcomes can we expect? So I thought having a live demonstration would be more effective than just describing it. So we have our courageous, curious,
valiant
couple, Rachel and Michael. Welcome.
Thank you. Can you hear us?
Yes. Yeah. Rachel, can...
Yeah, we're both on the same phone.
Okay. Terrific. How are you guys feeling right now as we get started, just to teach you, first of all, how to integrate the brain, and then we'll, later on, in a few minutes, we'll talk about the structure itself. But how are you feeling right now being here?
Well, it was a pretty big lead-in, but excited and nervous at the same time.
Sure. Rachel?
About the same.
Yeah, excited and a little nervous?
Yeah.
Okay, so what I want to do is, first of all, just walk you through some steps so that when you actually talk about the topic itself, you can do it in a much more calm, centered way so it doesn't trigger those historic reactions that can lead to a bad discussion. So if we start with Who's going to bring up the problem tonight?
I am.
Okay, so Rachel, you have a topic you want to discuss, and the topic is what?
Following through on threats made when we're disciplining our kids.
Okay, so you create a consequence and try to figure out, are you going to follow through with it?
Right. How we do it differently.
Okay. And how to follow through.
Right.
And typically when you have these discussions, where do they head? What happens?
Into who's right or into a power struggle. Instead of having solidarity between us, then I think the kids see, oh, I have an in or way to go, instead of it being an agreement.
So it sounds like an unpleasant discussion.
Right.
And is that from your perspective too, Michael, that it turns into an unpleasant discussion?
Well, not really. This is the first time I'm really thinking this through, so it doesn't seem to be as unpleasant to me, maybe, as it apparently would be with Rachel.
Okay. So, here's what we're going to do. So, but it's not you would not call it a pleasant discussion, would you?
Suppose it's not a pleasant discussion. Yes, I agree with that.
Okay. Yeah, it doesn't sound, if one person is really stressed in a discussion, it's pretty hard for the other person to be relaxed about it.
Yes.
Okay, so when you, Rachel, when you think about having typically this discussion with Michael, do you feel some tension in your body?
Yeah. I feel. Do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, where do you feel the tension in your body?
So I feel tension and anxiety, my stomach, my chest, like breathing, like I'm taking shorter breaths.
Okay.
And I have to struggle to take a deep breath.
Okay.
My stomach gets a knot.
Okay.
And just general probably tightness. And I can feel my heart pounding more rapidly.
You can feel some of this right now just thinking about those dialogues with Michael.
Right.
Yeah. And on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being high duress, high stress, it's generally about a what when you approach these discussions with Michael?
This specific one?
Yeah.
Around
discipline.
And probably an 8 or 9.
Okay, so it's right up there.
Right.
And Michael, when you think about having these discussions when Rachel is so distressed, do you feel any tension in your body?
Well, I feel the resident stress from when Rachel does it. So if I see her stress, I start to feel it.
Right. So it's, in a sense, it becomes kind of contagious.
Yes.
And then you pick up on it. And then where do you feel the stress in your body when she starts getting anxious?
In my chest, mostly. Anxious kind of stress.
Yeah, but you feel it in your chest when you start to experience her getting really anxious.
Yeah, you know, breathing starts to pick up a little bit.
Yeah, and generally when Rachel is really anxious, on a scale of 1 to 10, how strong would your anxiety be, your tension?
Well, if she's really anxious, which I guess includes the 2, 8, and 9.
Yeah.
So, it would get me going. It could get me going if it happens for a duration.
Right.
So it starts at maybe the onset of being at onset of 8 or 9. It would probably be at 6 to 7, and then it would gradually increase if it continues on for any length of time.
Yeah. Okay. Now here's what I want you to do, because here's what we're now going to start integrating the brain, so that when you talk about it, you're going to be more centered, more calm, and more relaxed. So we'll start, first of all, what I want you to do is just go back and feel the tension in your body when you think about having that discussion, where you feel that tension in your chest, that knot in your stomach, and as you feel that, take your left hand and just rub it slowly on your left knee, just up and down long ways on your left knee. As you think about that tension and all those associated distressing conversations you've had that felt like power struggles, no resolution, not creating a very united front for the kids, and not modeling the kind of parents that you wanted, and you wanted to be together, but you couldn't. So as you just each rub your left knee and think about the tension that you experienced from those discussions, what we're doing right now, I'm just making a conditioned response with your emotional brain as you rub that left knee. You're just associating that left knee rubbing with a shortcut to where the emotional brain is. Okay, now, here's what I want you to do. Take two relaxing breaths. Take your left hand off your left knee. Take two relaxing breaths. And that basically means exhaling completely. When you exhale completely, you automatically inhale more deeply. So as you take two relaxing breaths, because I just asked you to activate that emotional brain, now we need to calm that brain so it's not going to be activated in the discussion. So I've asked you to go into the emotional brain. You could feel the tension. Now we need to calm it. So take another relaxing breath and then stretch your arms out to the side and move them in circles, kind of like you were airplane wings moving in a circle, and stretch your legs and move your feet in a circle too if you're sitting down. And again, what I want, this is for the purpose of releasing the tension in your body that starts to accumulate when we think about trouble memories. Okay, so now what we have, you've gone into the place where it's difficult. We're trying to calm the emotional brain. Now let's go over for the substitute. When you are in those discussions, Rachel, if you were coming from your higher self, if you were coming from your more evolved self in a perfect interior world, how would you like to be when you're having this discussion with Michael? Not how you want him to be, but how would you like to be? And then Michael will be thinking about how he wants to be as a good responder, as a good listener when you talk about it. So from your higher self, how would you like to be, Rachel, when you talk about this?
Relaxed.
Okay.
Not feeling physically relaxed.
Okay. Now, as you talk about how you would like to be, Rachel, just rub your right knee with your right hand. So you want to be relaxed. You want to be physically relaxed. Okay, good. Because that starts with the body, and that's where the emotional brain starts to activate right away. So relaxed is good. How else?
Well, that combines with being able to hear clearly what Michael's saying.
Okay.
Then and it combines with being physically relaxed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I won't eat it, and I won't jump anywhere.
Okay, good. So you want to be relaxed when Michael responds. Cool. How would you like to be as you describe the problem? What would be some good qualities or characteristics in terms of describing the problem to him?
Clear.
Clear. Good. And that clarity helps him where the emotional brain is calm. Good.
Straightforward.
Straightforward. Yeah. Clear, straightforward.
Fair.
And fair. What does fair, I know what it means for me. What does fair mean to you?
Being able to appreciate what he's thinking or feeling.
Mm.
And how that plays into what's going on.
Oh, listen. That's really great. You would like to appreciate what he's thinking, what he's feeling, and that could that include then the appreciate the impact of what you're having on him, either positive or negative?
Right.
Okay. Cool. so you could have this kind of view from the balcony and see what you're doing, see how he's responding, and make appropriate adjustments.
And face whatever that is head on instead of use my energy to deal with whatever we're dealing with head on instead of using it to state it in a more safe way, or using it to understand if Michael's trying to state it in a more safe way.
Okay, great. And so sometimes in people's quest to be safe, they get vague and obscure.
Right. Like sugar coating.
Yeah.
I don't.
And we all know that telepathy is an unreliable form of communication. So it would really be great to do that. Now, Michael, how would you like to be as a good listener to Rachel in this process tonight?
Well, certainly I would like to be relaxed.
Good.
I would like to offer a sense of safety. So,
all right. Keep rubbing your right knee, Michael, as you talk about this with your right hand. Relaxed. Offer safety for her.
I would like for to be able to, I guess, present myself in attention to the safety in a calming manner that Rachel feels understood.
So as a listener, you really want to communicate somehow that you understand what she is saying.
Exactly.
Terrific. Anything else? These are great qualities.
I guess the one that kind of catches it all is I would like to make sure that I'm being empathetic.
Oh, dynamite. Now, here's what I want each of you to do. Put both, if you can, if you're able to, put both hands on your knees and move your hands back and forth or up and down your knees slowly. And think about the benefits if you each come from your higher self in this difficult, historically difficult dialogue topic. Think about the benefits if you individually come from your higher self and are able to help your partner also. If you come from your higher self, it encourages your partner to come from their higher self as well. But we start with improving our response first, rather than, which is more typical, trying to get our partner to change and then we follow along. So as you think about responding from your higher self, could you each say what a couple of the benefits are?
Well, clearly, communication would go a lot quicker and smoother.
And the benefit of that, Michael, would be what?
We'd feel more connected.
Yeah.
More appreciated.
More connected, more appreciated, and the benefits of that would be what, Michael?
A more intimate relationship.
Yeah, emotionally, perhaps physically, but you'd have a better sense of being a team.
Yes, yeah,
in multiple ways. Now, as you rub both your knees, can you get a picture of yourself being that way, Michael, the way you described from your higher self?
Yes, I can.
Terrific. And the more details you have about that picture, the better, because you're going to be using more regions of the brain. And Rachel, the benefits for you would be what? Responding from your higher self.
It's a stronger outlay of energy now, but the best benefit I can think of is that in the end, it'll be much better for us, it will save us a lot of wasted energy after this beginning portion, because our kids will understand what happens and what the consequences are, regardless of who they're talking to. So yes, it will be very straightforward, and for us it will be more straightforward. And so they won't play one or the other, or go ask one and then go ask the other.
Right.
There's no point to doing that.
And what a good modeling it sets for the kids. It's great modeling for how to talk about tough topics.
and it will feel better, I would think, for both of us in front of them, because it'll be just safer, stronger.
Yeah. You'll start to model what it's like to have different opinions and still talk it through, and that's terrific. It's terrific. Now, when you think about discussing the topic now, what do each of you feel? Before, it was an experience of tension and tightness. What do you feel now on our scale of 1 to 10 when you just think about having the discussion?
I feel better. Probably, I would rate it as more like a 5 now.
Okay.
It's more tangible to me, so that I can more quickly dial into reducing the strain and the stress instead of it overrunning me.
All right, great. Now, can you give the picture of your success a name? When you picture yourself being really successful, can you give that picture of yourself being successful a name so that will help us dial in even faster when we go through the dialogue? Do you have a name that you could give that?
I do.
What would be the name for that, Rachel?
Success.
Success?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so success will be, for you, that picture of coming from your higher self. And when we go through the steps, you can either rub your knees or repeat the word success as we go through the steps, which will help you stay calm and in tune with your higher self. So success will be your power word.
Okay.
Michael, do you have a name for your success picture?
Mine would be integrity.
Okay. So your higher self would be coming from integrity.
Yes.
All right, good. So when we do this, when you start feeling anxious or nervous, if you could just rub on your knees, Michael, and silently repeat to yourself integrity, and it will put you much more rapidly in touch with that higher self as you listen to Rachel. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, so it's a really rapid way of getting there. And Rachel, if you start feeling nervous, you can just repeat silently to yourself success and or rub your knees, and that will put you much more rapidly in touch with your higher self.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yep.
Okay, and as each of you are just being here now with that power word and with your rubbing your knee, I'm going to talk a minute about some of the thinking behind what Pete's going to be asking Michael and Rachel to do. A long time ago, the concept of iMessages was developed to help partners talk more productively. And in fact, the traditional iMessage went something like this. When you do X, like when you, don't discipline the children the same way I do, then I feel, and the person would fill in the blank, I feel Y. So I feel angry, or I feel scared, or I feel lonely. And then the effect it has on me would be described with a hope that the partner would do Z instead. And so embedded in the traditional iMessage way of talking about a problem is almost an inevitable backfiring, because there's almost an implied assumption that if I tell you what you do and what I feel about it, then you will change. And when a partner doesn't quickly hop to and change, then often iMessages get turned into being even more guilt-provoking or more blaming, and with a heavy emphasis on making the partner responsible for what you feel. And so as Pete moves into this, he's going to do it in a different way with Rachel. He's going to have her be the initiator of the discussion and give her a way to start a good discussion, not a bad discussion. Because for all of us, when we're talking to our partners, we don't want to be digging ourselves out of a hole that we didn't even mean to create. And a lot of time, the traditional iMessage can dig us into a hole that we didn't even mean to create when we started. So one of the ways to make this go better and to reduce the defensiveness in Michael or to reduce the cross-complaining that a partner would typically do is for the initiator of the discussion to take a lot of accountability, to take a lot of responsibility for their own piece in what goes on. So, for example, Pete already asked them to define the way that they would like to be if they're successful, to be calm or to be centered. That already creates a strong beginning. It's taking accountability for wanting to be more of a grown-up in the discussion, for wanting to manage their own limbic brain as much as possible. But then as they get started, Pete will be asking Rachel to describe some of her ineffective thoughts and attitudes. And as she does that, the purpose of that is really to avoid an emotional data dump. If Michael was to hear just an emotional data dump, it would be very stressful. But hearing her describe and recognize some of the things that she does that are ineffective leads to not just dumping, but actually, again, that kind of adult accountability. And showing that you recognize how you are when you're ineffectual shows to your partner that you have some prefrontal cortex thinking or that you have adult thinking and accountability that you're applying to the situation. Also, when he goes through this some more, he will be asking her some other questions which make it clear that there's not an automatic assumption that Michael should change core personality traits. And that's essential because so often when our partners come at us with something loaded emotionally, we think, gosh, we're supposed to change something that is a challenge to our integrity. As Michael said so eloquently, integrity is important to him. And then also, if there will be a series of questions that he will ask her to respond to that goes something like this. Even though my responses are ineffective, I still hope you will respond to me in a better way by, or, and sometimes I want you to respond to me in a more effective way because, or he'll do a series of questions that actually get at the magical thinking that some of us have when we're emotionally stressed. When we're in that emotional stress, we get into almost a kind of child-level fantasy thinking that our partner will just comply and give us exactly what we want so that we can have that wishful little kid dream. And he'll be helping her present it in a way that lets Michael know he doesn't have to comply in those ways.
Okay, so you will be getting, all the people on the call will be getting a description of all the questions that Rachel and Michael are going to go through. And the key is, when you go over the questions and think about the answers, then it makes it easier to follow the structure and it makes it easier for your partner to respond to you because it's a structured way to get at the breaking the patterns for how to talk about things versus solving it. So, here are the questions, and it starts with a person says to their partner, in this case, Rachel would say to Michael, okay, here's the problem, which is, and then say it again, Rachel.
Disciplining our children and our follow-through.
Okay.
That our follow-through doesn't match.
Okay, so that's the problem, and then you would say, why is this important to you? And you've already alluded to that a little bit before, but why is this topic important to you? And what does it symbolize to you, the struggle?
It symbolizes a lack of solidarity between us and a place that we can work to be more of a team.
Okay. And then on a scale of 1 to 10, how big of a problem is this for you?
I was reading how important.
Yeah, how important
it's
is it?
It's the 10 important.
Okay.
Because it'll base for our children how what we expect and how to be successful for them.
Okay, so when a person brings up a problem, initiates it, if they say to their partner, here's the problem, here's how big it is to me, here's how important it is to me, and here's why it's important, so that you give your partner some context of the problem instead of just launching into with our emotional brain wants to launch into just doing a finger point. So that's the context. Now here's where I'm going to ask Rachel to talk to Michael. And this time Rachel is going to be bringing up stuff, be describing something that is not typical for couples to do when they talk about a problem. So the next question for you, Rachel, is when this problem of disciplining and being out of sync happens, what are your ineffective attitudes or thoughts, which basically means what are the different ways that you would either blame or feel like a victim when this problem comes up?
I feel like I have to be the bad guy or the disciplinarian, and I feel alone.
Okay.
And feel like I'm not being effective.
Okay, so you feel like the bad guy, you're not effective, you feel alone. You're talking now about your negative thoughts and your negative emotions you have that just are pretty ineffective. Any other negative emotions or thoughts that you have?
Well, the emotions are different. Those are the thoughts, and my emotions are fear, helplessness, anxiety, pain. I guess along with the anxiety, so stress, that's kind of the same, and then sadness.
Okay. So now we know why this feels like a 10, a 9 or 10 to you, because of the intensity of all those experiences and emotions. So as you talk about that right now, Rachel, just take a relaxing breath. Repeat your power word, success. And if it helps to rub your right knee with your right hand as a way of just getting you recentered again, better in touch with your higher self, as we talk about this, and calm the emotional brain so that it's not being activated just by thinking about what you think and what you feel. And when you think and feel those thoughts and emotions, what do you do, Rachel, that tends to be ineffective?
Get upset and give up.
You get up, and when you're upset, what do you do?
Usually take a big sigh and shut down.
Okay, is that like withdraw?
Withdraw, yeah.
Yeah, don't talk too much.
It's not complete withdrawal, but on that topic,
yeah.
Just say, oh, forget it.
Forget it.
Right,
okay.
I'm not getting anywhere. This isn't working, so.
Okay. Okay, now, Michael, could you just take a relaxing breath and just recap the facts and feelings of what Rachel is saying to you? Because your role is to either ask questions for clarity or recap what you're hearing for understanding, and not try to explain or justify yourself right now.
Sure. So I hear the problem to be when we're out of sync on how we discipline our children, specifically when the follow-through doesn't match. It's important to Rachel because it makes it sound like it's a lack of solidarity between us. We become ineffective as a team, and we can't teach our children. And it's obviously important out of 10 out of 10, which is not as important as a guess.
Yeah.
And then when this happens, I hear her thoughts to being very negative and in the sense that, you know, bad guy, disciplinarian, and alone, meaning that there's really a hopelessness. And that's not the word she used, but I feel a sense of hopelessness in those thoughts.
Yeah. Is that fairly accurate, Rachel?
No, I don't feel hopelessness. I
feel
Yeah, that was...
No, good. I feel overwhelmed.
Okay.
No, I don't know.
Okay. There's an overwhelm and a helpless feeling.
Right. It's not hopelessness.
Okay. All right, that's a good distinction. All right, so does it seem like Michael is capturing what you're saying to him?
Yes.
All right, great. So keep repeating your success power word, rub on your knee, take a relaxing breath. And a part of you knows that when you withdraw or, you know, say things that aren't very nice, a part of you knows that doesn't work. Not very effective, but you do them anyway because why?
I don't know what else to do.
Oh, okay.
I don't feel safe, and I don't feel safe explaining the issues to Michael.
Yeah. Exactly.
I have blame thrown. I feel like blame is thrown at me, and so that takes the safety away.
Right. And then you do like what our emotional brain is designed to do. We seek safety. And then ultimately that means to withdraw. Because you don't feel safe, and continuing to engage feels too painful, too emotionally risky, not safe.
Right.
And that's a human, natural, normal instinct to do. But even though you respond this way to Michael these are not effective ways, you hope that Michael will respond to you in a better way by doing what?
Showing our children we stand together, being able to calmly respond to me or hear me without reacting.
Yeah.
We will do the typical reaction of if I say something and he reacts, and I react to him, and he reacts, and I react.
Right.
So if we can stop that at the beginning, that would go easier.
Okay.
And that would help us, both of us, to be able to predict what the consequences of what happens to each of us from what we're doing and our children.
By talking about it in a more calm way.
Yeah, and by sharing what we expect or where we're going.
Yeah, sharing what you expect. And sharing why it might be difficult for each of you to do in the moment what the other person wants. But you can talk about it more calmly.
Right.
Okay, Michael, can you do another recap again?
Probably not as effective, to be honest with you. So maybe I'm mixing it up a little bit. I heard that you asked Rachel about what she wants to hear from me when these ineffective behaviors occur.
Right.
And these ineffective behaviors include withdrawal because it's not sure what else to do.
Right.
Safe.
Good.
So what I heard, though, is I should try to not react, which...
Yeah. Stay centered.
That makes sense.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not sure, other than that, what else to do at that point because she's withdrawing and...
In the interest of time, let me suggest something, and if it works for Rachel, she could agree. But in the interest of time, I think Rachel is saying, look, I get so anxious, I get so scared, I don't know what else to do, I feel helpless. But if you, Michael, could stay centered when you start to see me get activated and anxious, if you could say, wait a minute, Rachel, I want to work on this together with you. And I want to hear really clearly what your struggle is. And so I'm not going to defend or justify myself right now, Rachel. What I want to do is hear more clearly what's important to you. And if you could do that in a calmer way, I think Rachel would not ratchet up to that number 10. Does that make sense, Rachel?
Absolutely. That's perfect.
Okay. Is that... pretty clear to you, Michael?
Yeah, that is. That helps.
Okay, great. Now, Rachel, something that you could do that would help Michael respond to you in a better way would be to what? Because, you know, he gets triggered too. How could you help him respond in a better way?
Are we skipping one thing before that?
Yeah. I think it's difficult for you, Michael, to respond to me in a better way because?
You may feel threatened. and we may be in a power struggle over whose way works best.
Yeah, so I may be digging in, and then it's hard for you to respond to me, Michael. And that would make it hard for him to be a better partner if a part of you, Rachel, is digging in.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Does that make sense, Michael?
Yep, sure.
Okay. Now, Rachel, something that you might do to help Michael respond to you in a better way would be what?
Clarify my purpose of being a united front together.
Okay.
And stay focused on that and not jump to some other, well, technically, well, traditionally jump to another topic or get filibustered to something else. And if I can keep going back to focusing on what we're talking about, I think that would be helpful and not react to him.
Okay, great. Great. Does that make sense to you, Michael?
That last part kind of tied it up, but I heard clearly state the purpose of being a united front.
Yeah.
As part of what could help me respond to her better.
Right. And I think if Rachel could also say to you, Michael, if you could respond to me right now in this moment, either by recapping what you're hearing or ask me some questions for clarification about what I want in this situation, would that be helpful, Rachel, and make it easier for Michael to respond to you?
Can I repeat this to you? If you could respond to me in this moment.
If you could say to Michael, here's what I want in this moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think that would make it better for him?
Correct.
So, let me back up for 1 second and say something. See, you did a great thing, Rachel, when you said, clarify my purpose, because in those heated moments, your purpose is still to be a team. It is to get to that place of solidarity. And so part of what you'd be doing by clarifying your purpose is really saying to Michael, I'm not trying to be in a power struggle with you. I'm not digging in. I really am looking, you know, we may be having some struggle here, but I'm looking for solidarity and teamwork with you.
Exactly. That's perfect. Exactly.
Good. Good. All right. So in the interest of time, well, it might be hard for you to do that because we all have our blocks, and that's your block on doing that would be what?
I feel so much anxiety.
Yeah.
And manifest this physically.
Right.
And instantaneously upon receiving a reactive response from you.
Exactly. And so that's that limbic brain just taking over again, so that it kind of puts that, what you just want to do about reminding him of teamwork, it kind of hijacks that thinking brain. But as you guys do this more calmly, then you're more in control of that emotional brain. Now, there's one more thing that a lot of sometimes somebody brings up a problem that they don't normally do, which is, Rachel, if you could say to Michael, Michael, I apologize when I am really activated. I apologize to you, Michael, by treating you ...
Okay. I apologize to you, Michael, when I'm activated, and I apologize to you by...
I apologize.
I'm reading the same thing as your which makes it harder for him you to give me what I want. And I apologize for going into this physical distress and reacting back to you, and that makes it harder for you to give me no reaction.
Right. It makes it a lot harder for him to give you the response you would like.
Right.
Yeah. Bingo. All right. Take another relaxing breath. Is there anything else you want to add, Rachel?
Yes.
Okay.
Michael, I love you. I appreciate you hearing me. And know we can work on our hurdles together. And thank you for your efforts and for doing this.
Wow, what do you feel as Michael listened to you all the way through on this, Rachel? Just affection and warmth towards him?
Yes, good. I feel heard.
Yeah, Michael, what do you feel listening to Rachel talk about the problem in this structure?
It feels really good because, you know, you get to the real issue at hand, right?
Yeah.
You get lost in words a lot of times, and here, when we take it one step at a time, you get to really truly understand the dynamic.
Yeah.
It's really powerful.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, you begin to see the systemic interaction. Yeah, and that really is good. So right now, when you started, before the dialogue, the tension was high. It's about, what is it for you now, Rachel?
Much better. Probably like a 4. And that's also your little trick, I guess I would call it, of breathing out all the way so you can take a deeper breath in. It's really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. So just rub your knee, appreciate the success, repeat your power word again. And the same for you, Michael, because you guys got through historically a really tough discussion, and you did it really nice, feeling much better about each other than historically. So high five to you guys.
Yeah, you guys did a great job, both of you giving Pete really clear answers and having given it some thought ahead of time. And Rachel, your ability to identify that the attention to begin with was a 10, but that you wanted to be successful, and Michael, that you wanted to have integrity, and both of you being able to really recognize that you want to be more of a team. And most couples do want to be more of a team, and then when they hit the wall of their differences, will feel alone. And it's important to be able to describe that to each other. And to Rachel, for you to recognize that when you get into that anxious state, you give up and you shut down, which then, of course, the withdrawal is going to be a trigger for Michael. So you both did such a lovely job of articulating your own positions, and that you didn't feel safe, and that in clarifying your purpose, that your purpose is indeed to be a team, that you want solidarity, that you don't want a power struggle, that just sets a whole different foundation for the two of you to go forward and talk more concretely about some of these issues.
And the great thing is, what we did tonight was set the foundation by breaking the pattern for how you talk about it. It wasn't designed to be a total negotiation, problem-solving discussion. We have actually a structure on our website, couplesinstitute.com, and when you go to the splash page and resources for couples, there is an article called Super Negotiation for Couples. But what Ellen and I have found out is that you really can't negotiate a tough topic without first having gone through this kind of process first by breaking the pattern and making it safer to discuss it. Michael, also, if they were in my office, I would say, Michael, do you want to talk about your perspective as the initiator?
Well, in fact, it would be great at some point for the two of you to do that, to reverse it.
To reverse roles. And Michael would talk about it. And then if it felt like you wanted to negotiate, go to our website and get the whole series of steps for effective negotiation. So I want to thank both you guys.
A lot. And let's open the line just quickly. We don't have much time left, but if anybody has a question, would you just say your first name real quickly so we know who has questions?
I had a question.
And you are?
I'm Jan.
Jan? Okay.
I would just, if you could just briefly say why you use the physical touch on the knee.
It's literally when we touch one part of our body, like on our left knee, it activates the right brain. When we touch the right knee, it activates the left brain. And by touching both of them while we're talking, it really brings into play many more regions of the brain for the discussion rather than just getting caught and stuck in the loop of the emotional brain.
Thank you very much. That's very, very interesting.
And another thing that can sometimes help is rubbing both knees and turning your head side to side, and then you really are creating an integration between the left and right brain.
Yeah, it really helps us get out of that loop and stuck in the emotional limbic brain.
Anybody else have a question?
I have a question. you have any problems with that activity of touching both knees or left and right?
Do you have any, I'm sorry, do you have any what?
The resistance to the rubbing the knees.
Not usually, no. I mean, most people are pretty able to rub their knees. If they don't want to rub their knees, then you can have them tap their feet instead of rubbing their knees. Tap their feet up and down. One other thing, since we are just about out of time, just quick feedback from anybody, what it was like listening to this, experiencing what the couple did.
Hello?
Yes.
It's interesting. I found it interesting, and I also found it a little distant for our situation because their circumstance has to do with having children in common and a common problem, whereas most of our conflicts are differences of opinion regarding situations. There isn't something that is a common thing that we are working on. It's not something. So I found the example a little distant for grasping how we could apply it for ourselves.
Right. You can take the same process using the different. When you disagree with me, honey, here's what I think. Here's what I feel. Here's what I do. That's not very effective. And again, this is not a process to solve the problem. It's a process to start breaking the pattern and talking about it easier.
Well, and when you have the sense of both of you buying into a process to change the reactivity and to create a better foundation for how you talk about things with each other, that's a beginning bridge in and of itself. One last question.
Yes, we have a question here.
This is Margaret. I have a question. You indicated on your website you have a way to discuss negotiation for couples. What about the process that you just went through? Is there a place on your website?
Well, you're going to get this whole process. We're going to transcribe the call. You're going to get the structure of all the questions that Rachel had ahead of time. And we will get that to you as fast as we can. It takes a little while to get the whole thing transcribed, but we will get it to you as soon as we can.
Can you send it to someone who does not have access to a computer?
If you don't have access to a computer and you email us and let us know you don't have access to a computer, we can send you a hard copy.
If we don't have access to a computer, it's hard to email you. Can we call you to let us
know? Just phone
Michelle.
Call us and we'll arrange it.
Thank you.
We'll take care of it.
This is Rachel. Can I say one other thing to the person who asked the question about not the having issue that's not agreed upon?
Right.
So the process really, for us, we were talking about our kids, but there have been plenty of other issues that we've used this process on that have nothing to do with something that we have in common, that we have completely opposite ideas, and it's just made us feel more safe to be able to talk to each other.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you, and thank you, and listen, we really appreciate everybody who signed up tonight, participated in this, and practice. This is like an athletic skill almost. It takes practice, it takes time, so please use the skills and create that kind of better connection with your partner and vice versa. So for the part of each of you that wants to have a better relationship with your partner, you can use this with your kids as well.
We're really committed to providing a lot of information to people to help make relationships that flourish and are strong. And we've just created a new website called thecouplesinstitute.com. And if you go there, you will be receiving some other audio from us that's free. You'll have a chance to write in questions to us, and we'll be answering those on a weekly basis, too.
Repeat that website again, please.
Yeah, www.thecouplesinstitute.com.
Like T-H-E?
T-H-E, C-O-U-P-L-E-S, institute.com, all one word.
Okay.
And
I'm glad Ellen mentioned that because it gives you a chance to write in questions for us that we'll be asked, that we'll be responding to.
Right. Also, I'd like to mention that Pete's weekend workshop for couples, Coming From Your Heart, is coming up very soon. The next one takes place October 28th and 29th. And if you're interested, please email our office through the website, couplesinstitute.com, or call 650-327-5915. And if you're out of the area, we've got a toll-free number that's 877-327-5915. We've had to turn people away from the last few workshops, and he only does them a couple times a year. So if you're interested in coming, please don't wait too long to contact us.
Where is it going to be?
It takes place in Santa Clara, California, between San Jose and San Francisco. And you will have those phone numbers and emails once you get the transcription of tonight's call. So if you didn't get a chance to write them down right now, remember that you'll get them in a couple of weeks. And that's it, I think.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Good night.